Good morning, all. Hope everybody's well this morning. A little bit of dusting outside, a little bit of white stuff on the ground, though. Snow. So we've been walking with Jesus and Luke again. And a very simple phrase kind of spoke to me. So last time we were together, what we looked at was Jesus having sent the 12 out. And the work that they did in the community, among the people, preaching the kingdom, healing the sick, remaining in a particular place that would welcome them and be hospitable and who's offered them a peaceful lodge. One of the things we recognized in that context of that was all the things that Jesus had given them to do and the manner with which they would do it began to transform lives, and somehow that got to Herod. In other words, even though they went about their business and did not make a show of it, it would seem, somehow the effect of the kingdom moving forward alerted the authorities that something was happening. And the whole idea there is this: Jesus instructs us then when we do an act of righteousness, when we serve, we're to do it in such a way that our left hand doesn't know what our right hand is doing. We're to do it humbly, modestly, quietly, secretly. In fact, Jesus uses the word secret. He says, what you do in secret, the Father will see, and you'll gain your reward. So although it wasn't secret in the sense that it was a whisper in a dark corner, it was not shouted out. It was not placed on a billboard. What Jesus had done was moved. He had commissioned his disciples to move through villages and present the kingdom of heaven and to heal the sick and to give them hope. That movement alerted the authorities, whether the unseen or the seen, and the fact that the kingdom was moving forward made an impact. What does it have to do with us? It has to do with the fact that what God calls us to do is to just go about his business as he has ordained, as he orchestrates, and as he has commanded. Everyday life encounters with people within our sphere of influence that I have the privilege to meet and to speak to and to bring healing. Now you go, healing. Yeah, healing. Let me ask us this. There's certainly the healing of a broken finger, the healing of a organ that is suffering, the healing of skin that is, you know, that has some epidural issue. Did I say what? No. What is this called? What's the skin called? I don't remember. That all being said, is Peter Wiggins on us with us today? Hey, Doc, you need to help me out there with what we call this stuff right here. Epidermis, thank you. That was Beth. Thank you very much. She's a genius. Where were we? I digress. Oh, there could be these physical ailments that the Lord may choose to heal. But the fact of the matter is, it's the ailments of the soul, of the spirit, of the mind, of the psyche, that actually produces more ailment than anything the body can do. And anything that is more profound than anything that happens to the actual physical body, with regard to how it affects the body. And so although I believe that God can heal, and according to his will and purposes, will heal the physical self, I think more profoundly, he's longing to heal the spiritual self, the actual soul, the actual life of the person. All healing will end at some point in regard to the physical self, because the body will eventually die due to the effects of sin and brokenness. But the soul lives on. And so we bring healing when we can bring peace, hope, joy, purpose, significance, value, belonging. Fellowship, koinonia. That produces healing. And that psychological healing, that mental healing, that spiritual healing also has a tendency to aid the body in its healing. And I'm not saying that they have to be yes, the body can be healed, yes, the spirit can be healed, but there is a holistic reality of the inner self and the spiritual self and the physical self. So when we bring a message of hope, essentially what we're bringing is a message of healing and restoration, forgiveness of sin, guilt, shame, the weight of consequence, the hopelessness of not being able to see beyond my fingertips, the wondering what happens to my life when I pass. Is there anything after this? And if there is, what is it? Those are all things that weigh on the human mind and the human heart and the human soul and the human psyche. And when we bring that forward with a message of hope and joy, it produces healing. Do not underestimate this. And so what's happening is, as people are hearing about the kingdom and their lives are being transformed and healing is occurring, done in an inauspicious way, that rises to the top. People hear about that. They see differences over the course of time and they wonder. That's where we were. That's what's happening. So what's happening next is this. The apostles, now we're in Luke 9, and start at verse 10. It says, when the apostles returned, they reported to Jesus what they had done, all the things that they had experienced, the homes they stayed in, the people who were hospitable to them, the peace that they experienced, the words that went out, the lives that were touched, the healings that occurred, the transformation of the lives before them. Then when the apostles returned, they reported to Jesus what they had done. Then Jesus took them with him, and they withdrew themselves to a town called Bethsaida. And the purpose of this was for Jesus to give them rest, for them to enjoy each other's company for a period, to be recharged and to be restored. But, it says, the crowds learned about it and followed him. Jesus welcomed them. He was not annoyed. He wasn't put off. He didn't shoo them away. No, he welcomed them. And he welcomed them because the time is short. This is the moment. They have come into my presence. How will I engage? Will I be able to put the thing that I'm doing to the side for a moment and engage right here? Do I realize that this moment is an orchestrated moment, that God is in the midst of it, and this is sacred? And the opportunity for me and Jesus in this particular context to actually demonstrate now to his disciples that he is about this thing, and what he sent them out to do is what the kingdom of heaven is. And it's not always you going, it's sometimes them coming. And it's not always convenient, but it's always right. So look what he says. When the apostles returned, they reported to Jesus what they had done. Then he took them with him, and they withdrew to them, by themselves to the town of Bethsaida. But the crowds learned about it, and they followed him. Why? They had heard. They had seen. Some had experienced. They were longing. They were wanting. They were intrigued. They were titillated. Some had hope and wanted that hope confirmed. Some didn't have hope and wanted to get some. Look what it says. He welcomed them. And I love this little phrase. He welcomed them and he spoke to them. You see, this is where I want to land for the moment. When I picture this and I see Jesus leading his disciples to Bethsaida and to a place of quiet, a place that they could spend some time to rejuvenate and to restore and to restore fellowship because they had been gone and now they've come back together. I assume that he's looking forward to this time with his disciples. I'm assuming that the disciples are looking forward to this time with Jesus. And they're debriefing, and they're talking, and they're celebrating, and they're asking questions. Why did it work here? Why didn't it work? Why would somebody receive us here and not there? Reconnecting, having conversation, laughing. The crowds begin to come forward, and Jesus looks up and sees them begin to come. And he turns to his disciples and said, we must meet them. We must be here with them. We must receive them. I don't know about you, but I've had times in my life where I was looking for to go on vacation and spend some time on the beach and maybe be a little bit of a recluse and sit on my chair and be refreshed and restored. And within minutes, I have somebody come to me that wants to speak. And within minutes, I encounter someone and conversation begins to ensue. And in my mind, I might say, well, again, I was really looking to relax and be by myself for a while. But something rises up inside, a joy, an anticipation of what's coming, the privilege of having this one-on-one encounter where the conversation begins to come and the connections are being made and you begin to pray in your spirit, Lord, help me to look like you today. May I speak your words today. Open the opportunity to share. And it begins with small talk and it moves to what do you do? And then moves to what is your family like? And then it can move to how's your life? It's an amazing thing when all of a sudden we're willing to be interrupted, inconvenienced, and we're willing and able to put that to the side for a moment and speak to them and speak with them. I love the simplicity of the phrase, and he spoke to them. He didn't teach them. He didn't preach at them. He didn't evangelize. No, he spoke with them. He spoke to them. There's a gentleness. There's a normalcy. There's a humanity about this. They would come. He would put aside what he was doing, and he would speak to them. The crowds learned about where he was, and they followed him, and he welcomed them. He didn't roll his eyes. He didn't have a deep sigh, although he may have privately, not in their seeing. He welcomed them. He invited them. He engaged with them, and he spoke with them. We have opportunities throughout the day to be present, to be available, to be approachable, to be interruptible, to learn to put something aside for the sacred moment of an encounter where we may be given the privilege to welcome and speak. And although it may not be a full-blown gospel message in the moment, what it can be is kindness, consideration, courtesy, pleasantries, a shared smile, a moment of shared grief, a prayer, a welcoming, a seed planted for a future encounter, a future conversation that you might not even be able to have with this person, but the Lord orchestrates another encounter with another believer who then builds on the seed that you've planted, who waters it, who allows sun to shine on it, who pulls a weed out so that it would not be overwhelmed. We have to remember that our encounters don't happen in a vacuum. We're not the only ones affecting someone's life, but we are one of them that affects the life. And the impression that they get about God and Jesus has much to do with how it is we welcome and speak, how we respond when someone interrupts us or brings a moment of seeming inconvenience. When we have to put a task aside for the moment or invite them into the task if need be, but that we engage because this is the moment and it's the only one. And this is the encounter orchestrated by God. And this is a sacred moment that is to be shared, to be ministered in, to and for. I love that phrase. He welcomed them. And he spoke to them. May we dwell for a moment on what his countenance must have been. On the fact that for whatever reason, the crowds certainly could have been just pushing in and, because it happened. And crushing him because it happened. Or insisting because it happened. But imagine now them coming and what his countenance must have been. That he would look up and stand and welcome and receive. Speak. That's a salve on the heart. That's the beginning of healing. That is a seed planted in soil that the Lord will bring others to water, to bring some into weed, and to cultivate, and to protect. May we be willing, just like Jesus, who had this moment in mind, and he was being intentional with his men, and he was pulling them to the side, to be interrupted, to be inconvenienced, and to do so with a sense of joy and peace and opportunity. And may we welcome it and then speak as Christ would speak.